The state opening of Parliament takes place this morning, but the minority Conservative government still has not managed to strike a deal with the DUP. Talks are continuing at Downing Street. The secured agreement that will see the DUP supporting the Tories in crucial votes in Parliament, or will it? Let's speak to BBC Northern Ireland's political editor, Mark Devenport. Good morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, Stephen.
So what's happening? Damien Green saying that he's not sure if they'll be able to reach a deal. What on earth's going on?
Yes, well, it's certainly been a bit of a roller coaster. About 11 days ago, when these talks started between the Conservatives and the DUP, the Conservatives seemed to think it was all in the bag. Downing Street actually prematurely announced a deal. And yet, 11 days on, there is no deal. We had yesterday Chris Grayling, who's the Transport Secretary, saying, oh, don't focus on the Queen's speech. The important day is the vote next week when MPs will actually vote on the Queen's speech. And then this morning, Damien Green, whilst he's still saying, oh, things are going well, we've got a lot in common, he is admitting that they might not be able to reach a deal. So it's hard to know how much of this is simply tactical in terms of the DUP trying to buy more concessions before they actually sign up to anything, and how much of it is a real problem for the government.
Well, exactly. So is this just the shenanigans that goes on in a poker game like this, or could this all fall apart?
Well, I mean, I've covered enough negotiation processes to know that you have to take more or less everything with a pinch of salt, because I can remember the days when the Ulster Unionists said they wouldn't touch the Good Friday Agreement with a 40-foot barge pole, and then a couple of days later they signed up to it. So you have to be aware that all these public comments, negative briefing, may well be part of an arm-twisting exercise. But it may also be that there are some gaps there. You know, some of the things that the DUP, they haven't been talking about publicly, but that we think that they want in terms of a very big uplift in health funding. There was a report there from my colleague Mary-Louise Connolly just the other day about an extra £1 billion for health. Some changes in terms of cutting air passenger duty or lowering the bill that the Northern Ireland and a block grant might be cut by in terms of if they have to lower corporation tax. All these things are quite big ticket items, and it may well be that the Conservatives are wondering how that would go down across the rest of the UK, and the Treasury may be reluctant to sign off on such big commitments.
Malachy O'Doherty with us this morning as well. Do you think this is gamesmanship, brinkmanship, Malachy?
Well, good morning, Stephen. Well, it might be that, but I mean, I've always thought, you know, from the start of this, I'm asking myself, who's got more to gain and more to lose here, you know? And at first sight, you would think, well, the DUP, for them, it's like a God-given opportunity. They are needed to support the Prime Minister and the Tory party so they can name their price. But actually, you know, we've seen since then that this huge public and social media swing against the DUP and a demeaning of the DUP, which has actually been quite unfair on some levels, but still it's there. And you also have Theresa May, a factor in this which I haven't heard much discussed, and that is direct rule is on the cards. There's a deadline for the completion of talks here on June the 29th, and Theresa May does not want direct rule. And it may well be that when she's sitting down and talking to Arlene over the nice cups of tea in the bone china, that, you know, Arlene's being made aware that she has to spare Theresa May a lot of anxiety and a lot of problems as well. You know, that that it's not just as simple as that that the DUP can step forward and hand a fig leaf to the Prime Minister and receive her gratitude. You know, there has to be reciprocation here. That may be the case. And I just think as well, you know, when John Major entered this debate and he said, you know, think about this, the government doesn't really need the DUP here. I mean, it's awkward, yes, if every time there's...
Surely it does, Malachy.
Well, it's better to get the thing wrapped up in one agreement that you've got this cover, you've got this guaranteed support in various things like the Queen's speech and in no confidence votes. But the other way to do it is just take it a day at a time. And yes, it's more complex and on the rest of it. But all in all, and this is, you know, John Major understands the working of Parliament better than I do, and that's his opinion. All in all, it's not actually strictly necessary.
So what happens next? When does this run out of time, so to speak, Mark?
I think that the vote on the Queen's speech is due on Thursday of next week. Arlene Foster has already said to the BBC that it will be right and proper for her MPs to back the government on the Queen's speech. I suppose she could rethink that if her party is not being offered what it likes. Even if they abstained, and it's very hard to imagine them actually voting against the government because of all that they have said about Jeremy Corbyn, if they abstained, remained, the government would still have a narrow majority, so it would survive. But it might then signal a more fractious relationship between the DUP and the Conservatives as the parliament go on. And one other thing to throw into the mix, Thursday of next week is also the deadline for restoring devolution at Stormont. Yeah. So everything is coming together, and the two processes are connected.
And the Belfast Telegraph reporting this morning that DUP sources are saying that the NIO is the problem, as it's being deeply unhelpful with interference based on wrongly arguing, this is from the DUP sources' perspective, that a deal would compromise the government's impartiality in restoring Stormont.
This puzzled me a little bit, because those that I have talked to at the Northern Ireland office have been pretty adamant that they don't believe this would compromise impartiality. And so I wondered, I'm not questioning the quotes, because some of them are certainly consistent with what DUP sources have been telling me about what they believe is the chaotic approach of Downing Street. I'm wondering whether, if there are political elements to what the DUP is asking for, as well as financial elements, if those are the kind of issues where some in the Northern Ireland office might be saying, look, hang on, this could cause a problem for the talk. So obviously, the devil will be in the detail in terms of what we see the DUP trying to negotiate. But I would have thought that Northern Ireland office would not have a concern about any large amounts of cash coming to Northern Ireland, because it makes their job easier. But they may have a concern if there are political aspects to this package.
What might the DUP be trying to get in this negotiation that the Tories don't want to give?
Well, on a financial level, we certainly know that they're looking for things like the cutting of air passenger duty, and the Tories might be concerned about what that will mean, not only to the Treasury finances in general, but if there were any precedents set for other regions in the UK. We think, because Arlene Foster effectively confirmed this in an interview she did on Friday with me, that they believe that the kind of bill that the Treasury has been saying Northern Ireland would need to pay for reducing the local level of corporation tax, that is no longer sustainable in an era when we're coming out of the EU and don't have to keep to EU state aid rules. So those are big items. And then, as I say, my colleague Mary-Louise Connolly was talking about as much as a tranche of £1 billion extra for health, and maybe they've also talked about extra money for education. Those things may cause economic problems to the Treasury. What's unclear is whether they're also pursuing some of their political aspirations, whether it be trying to protect former soldiers and former police officers against prosecution. That's the kind of thing that could cause more problems in relation to the Stormont talks.
Are we close to a deal locally?
Well, locally, I think the two things are really connected, because the other parties are going to try to see what is actually in the detail of the DUP Conservative deal before they decide whether it's beneficial for Stormont. And it may include some tempting economic boons, some of which may be tied to the restoration of the executive. So that might actually be sort of beneficial for a deal if there are political aspects in it. Some of the nationalists might balk at that. So really, the two things are pretty much connected. I do know that the DUP executive is due to be meeting in Belfast tomorrow night, and whether that's a sign that they're there potentially to rubber stamp a deal or not, I'm uncertain. The DUP will only say to me, look, that's a routine meeting, don't read too much into that.
But how could they get themselves out of how they've backed themselves into corners? So if there were to be a local deal, then presumably either Arlene Foster would have to step aside, or Sinn Féin would have to back down from this demand that she steps aside during the RHI inquiry, for example. Then you've got all the disagreement around the Irish Language Act as well. How could they back out of each other's corners?
I've long been of the view that some of them have to effectively trade some of these red lines away. How you do it is difficult. In recent days, Sinn Féin have come out and they've said, look, we haven't changed our mind. That red line about Arlene Foster is still in existence, even though Gerry Adams appeared to soften the red line significantly. Arlene Foster certainly is not in a mood to be going anywhere or to be told that she can't do anything. She's just delivered 292,000 votes for the DUP. She's got 10 MPs and she's got this unparalleled position of influence over in Westminster.
So if there is to be a local deal, a local executive, then Sinn Féin are going to have to back down.
I haven't come across anybody in recent times in the DUP talking about putting anybody else up for the position of First Minister.
So Sinn Féin are going to have to back down, Mark. They're not going to like me saying that out loud, but how can you square that circle if they don't?
I think we won't get a restoration of Stormont in the short term unless they do. Now, it may be very difficult for them, but maybe The context will change if we have a very generous, you know, side deal between the DUP and the Conservatives. It's hard to know, but I can't really see them holding to that line and the DUP suddenly saying, look, we thought about this and here's Simon Hamilton for First Minister. It just doesn't seem plausible at the moment.
Do you agree, Maliki?
Well, I just think that, you know, the coming together of the completion of the talks and the deal with the Tories all just serves towards the aggrandisement of Arlene Foster, you know, and for that, and that must make Sinn Féin balk, you know. If you do get a deal next week, you know, almost whatever is in it, the person who's going to be, you know, be elevated to the right hand of the leader is Arlene Foster, and she will appear to be the great beneficiary of that. And how does Sinn Féin avoid that looking like humiliation for themselves, even if they got what they wanted, and they're not going to get it? I mean, the idea that Arlene Foster would step down as leader at a moment like that, you know, is just ridiculous. So I'm, you know, I'm among the sceptics who, you know, think, you know, it'll be very, very hard to get this done by next Thursday.
And what then happens? Direct rule?
What then happens is direct rule, and you see, if you, I suppose there's a possibility that Arlene could be talking to Theresa May and say, look, could we keep this ticking over to the end of the summer? Could we keep maybe half the salaries in play, you know, and spare us that horror for now? But, I mean, if Sinn Féin want Arlene Foster to have egg on her face next week, and they do, that's what they want every day, that's what they get out of bed in the morning to do, then they have an opportunity to do that by simply crashing that deadline.
Nelson McCausland in the studio with us this morning. Good morning to you, Nelson.
Good morning.
Good morning. Former DUP MLA, obviously. What's your take on this? First of all, the local executive, do you think there'll be a deal?
Unless there is some change on the part of Sinn Féin, unless they get away from this firm attachment to red lines, I think it's extremely difficult. There's been no indication from them that they are prepared to come to any accommodation regarding an Irish Language Act. It has to be freestanding. It has to be strong, dynamic. These are the sort of extreme demands they're making. And
extreme demand. They would call that their right. We've asked them on the programme. They don't have anybody available, but they wouldn't call it an extreme demand to have a language recognised.
Well, the language is already recognised. I think the difficulty is that when you press them about the implications of it, Gerry Adams is not a man for detail. He's a man for the big picture. When it comes to this particular issue, it's very clear from past experience to me that he doesn't really even understand all of the details and the outworkings of it, the cost of it, the number of people who would be employed, all of these things. And recently, when questions were put to several organisations that are strong advocates of it, they were unable to say how much it would cost or how many people would be employed. They don't even know how many people are employed in the sector at the moment.
And what about Arlene Foster's position within your party?
Arlene Foster has emerged from the election with a tremendous result. The election was a good day for Ulster, a good day for the Union, and certainly a good day for the DUP. I think her position is extremely strong, and also not simply within the party, but within the broader unionist community. Just looking at social media, talking to people in the street and shops and so on, there's a very, very strong level of support there.
Maliki?
Well, I think that's right. That's what I said. I mean, you know, the idea that Arlene Foster, at the moment of greatest achievement, which would be the deal with the Tories, if it works, the completion of a deal with Sinn Féin, if it works, the idea that at that moment she would stand down just seems ridiculous. And as Nelson rightly says, she has reaped in this huge vote, additional vote for the party. So that's not going to happen. But we have had intimations from Gerry Adams that it needn't necessarily happen. You know, because he did say in an earlier interview, and I'm going back, I think, to March on this, that, you know, well, that's a question for the end of the process. We talk about the things that we have to agree on, and at the end, you know, that will be the last item on the agenda. And I would have thought if Sinn Féin was satisfied with what it had got on the agenda up to that point, then it would be absurd for them to stick to that. It always seems...
How do they save face around that, though?
Well, it does does seem to me that it's Michelle O'Neill who is more emphatic about that as a red line. You know, it was her, it was she who came out, I think, on The View one night and first declared it to be a red line. And I've thought that since then, Gerry Adams was more providing cover for that than wholeheartedly endorsing it. I could be wrong in that. But essentially, I mean, it doesn't make sense to say that the last item on the agenda, whether or not the First Minister step aside, that is effectively the first item on the agenda, that nothing else matters unless that's dealt with. And when you have situations like that, it tends not to work. When in the peace process, it was decommissioning is the last item on the agenda. With in the Middle East, it's the status of Jerusalem. You know, there's this idea that there's one thing, that nothing's agreed until everything is agreed, and none of this matters unless Arlene steps aside. I think in the balance, if you do have an Irish Language Act or a Cultural Language Act that is satisfactory, and you do have other things, and you do have the prospect of people saving their jobs, because, I mean, there's, 27 Sinn Féin MLAs who potentially just all lose their salaries over this, you know, and that must weigh somewhere in the thinking of the Sinn Féin leaders. So if that is all in play and that is all somehow achievable as a completed deal, and then you throw the whole thing away because Arlene refuses to step aside, I actually don't see that happening. I would see that as political immaturity of a very high order to let that be a sticking point.
Should we be worried, Nelson, in your view, about direct rule?
It's obviously preferable to have a devolved government at Stormont. But for a period of time, if that is what is required, it will have to be. The fact is that Sinn Féin have created the situation. They brought down the Assembly. They created the difficulty. They forced an election. And we're now in this situation. I think the one caveat to what Malachy was saying, and I agree with virtually everything he said there, but the one caveat is this. Sinn Féin play a very long game. They look at it as the long war. And for them, this issue of getting most of their demands, certainly in regard to language and culture, is part of their process of building up their community infrastructure. I think that's a big element in their thinking. Also, bearing in mind that Adams...
What do you mean by community infrastructure? You nearly suggest impropriety.
Well, let me give you an example of that.
You're talking about a language here, which many people see as their first language within their community.
Let me give you an example of what I'm talking about. Some time ago, Sinn Féin did a side deal with the Labour Party. They walked away from that with £8 million. Adams negotiated it. That was their demand. The Labour Party gave it to them as a side deal. The result of that was they set up a trust fund. And Kistja in Festiochta Geliga is my attempt at the pronunciation. I think it's near the mark. If you look at the initial people who were put on to the board of that, effectively overwhelmingly Sinn Féin. So there is a sense of proprietorial approach there in that regard.
It would be a wee bit rich. And I know you're not a DP MLA anymore, but of course it is the DUP who are over trying to do a deal with the government now.
Indeed.
Deals are done in politics every day of the week.
And the irony was that...
Nothing improper about that.
And absolutely not. But I'm simply... It's not the fact of a side deal. I'm simply pointing out the fact, this issue about proprietorial approach. There was an irony in the fact that Gerry Adams was the one talking about side deals, whereas over the years, there have been a fair number of side deals done by Sinn Féin.
Here's Margaret and Ross Trevor. Morning, Margaret.
Good morning, Stephen.
Go ahead, Margaret.
Stephen, I just have a query because I need to understand, what's the difference between Sinn Féin having a red line and Arlene Foster at the moment is having a red line with the Conservative Party and Theresa May? Now, what is the difference there? She's fighting for what she wants. Sinn Féin are fighting for what they want. So what's the difference?
And who do you support in this?
No one. I just need to understand.
Do you think Arlene Foster should have red lines?
Yeah, well, if Sinn Féin can have a red line, Arlene Foster can have a red line. But why take it out on Sinn Féin as they're not getting what they need in this setup? And yet, Arlene Foster is doing the very same thing to Theresa May at the moment.
What are her red lines
to understand
in this negotiation? Well, do you know Nelson?
Just to pick up on the point, really, first of all, the difference, I think, is that what is being talked about at Westminster is a voluntary arrangement. People enter into that voluntarily. The difference at Stormont is that it would be a mandatory coalition. That is what was brought into being by the Belfast Agreement. And in a mandatory coalition, one of the larger parties has the right, therefore, to collapse the whole system. That's the difference.
Do you know what the red lines are?
No, I don't. We can all speculate as to the sort of things that the party would want to have in some arrangement of confidence and supply.
Like what?
Well, the party has in the past published in 2015, there was a document then that showed the sort of things they were talking about. You can look at their current manifesto. I don't know which of those elements are right at the top of the list. Financial benefit for Northern Ireland would obviously be a part of that. We do need, for example, a major reform of the health service, and that will require capital investment. And there may be something around that. It could be that it is something...
But why should Northern Ireland... The NHS is a pressing issue across the UK. Why, from Theresa May, or indeed any taxpayer's point of view across the water, why should Northern Ireland get priority for the NHS?
15-month waiting list for a hip replacement, Stephen.
Yeah, but from... I get that. Yeah. I get that. But from
which is apparently the worst in the UK.
But from the perspective of Theresa May, why should Northern Ireland get extra for NHS above anyone else in the UK? Nelson?
Well, first of all, it's incumbent on the DUP to negotiate the best deal, and they have some influence at the moment, and therefore, over the next while, they will seek to gain whatever they can for Northern Ireland.
But it's for Theresa the DUP to look at the whole of the UK rather than Northern Ireland, is it not?
It is. And when they say, for example, that they are opposed to means testing certain benefits like the winter fuel payment, that's for the benefit of the whole of the United Kingdom, not just the people in Northern Ireland. So I think they will be responsible, and they will realise that you should not overplay the situation, you shouldn't overplay your hand, you need to be realistic. And I would hope that the Conservative government in their negotiations will approach them realistically as well.
Stephen McNew from the Green Party. Morning to you, Stephen.
Good morning, Stephen.
Are you confident of a deal next week for the executive?
I wouldn't say confident. I would say I'm hopeful. I've heard more positive noises from the parties this week. There seems to be more of a willingness to do a deal, but things can change very quickly in politics, as you know, and until it's done, I won't believe that it's going to be done. But I think it's important. We get hung up on the politics sometimes about to look at why we need a deal. You know, I was on another BBC programme and said, but life goes on, you know, but that's true for many of us in society, but are most vulnerable in society, particularly those who access services, for example, from the voluntary sector. I met with a group of chief executives yesterday, and they were talking about the types of services that are at risk because of the fact that we have no government in Northern Ireland. You know, not just the job losses in our sector, but the risk to services to our most vulnerable families. Even if we look at education, you know, we're hearing schools potentially going into deficit because we have nobody managing the schools crisis, so that could hit our children. If we move away a bit from the politics and the impact in real lives, and this is the impact that this current crisis is having.
Albert and Glengormley. Morning, Albert.
Good morning, Stephen. Stephen, it's just shown over the last 20 years that the Belfast Agreement hasn't worked and will never work. And I just wondered, with the strength that the DUP and Arlene Foster has at the minute, the question is, should she be pushing for changes into the Belfast Agreement or renegotiation of the Belfast Agreement, like mandatory coalition, because she has the strength with the deal with the Conservatives, and she's a strength at the minute that she doesn't have to go back into government until she gets what she wants. And I think this is a great opportunity because the DUP did not support the Belfast Agreement, and this is a great chance for her to basically get it all sorted out.
But what would you want? What would you want? When you say sort it out, what would you want?
Well, To me, I want voluntary coalition. I don't want mandatory coalition. That's the main thing, because as Nelson McCausland said, you know, one party can bring our government down to its knees. That shouldn't be right. You know, that affects everybody, both sides of the community in Northern Ireland, and look where we are. But do we hold out? Does Arlene Foster hold out to get that? Because I've never heard yourself or other commentators or even Nelson even bringing that into the mix, that the Belfast Agreement is not working and it should be changed.
Stuart Dixon from the Alliance Party. Morning to you, Stuart.
Good morning, Steve.
Are you confident of an executive deal next week?
I am hopeful for one. Confident is perhaps a little too far.
Well, what's going on? Is there any progress?
Well, those are questions which I, from the Alliance Party's perspective, we are up to. We are ready and willing, capable and able to strike a deal to enable a return to stable government here in Northern Ireland.
Yeah, but has there been any progress?
Well, progress has been made. The parties are, by and large, we know what the issues are. They have been distilled down to very specific points. Can a deal be done? The short answer to that question is absolutely yes. Stephen, last night I was in a local primary school in my constituency. It was an end-of-term concert. But that school, like so many schools across Northern Ireland, will be breaking up in the next week or so. And they will not know what their budget for September is. They will not know whether they will have classroom assistance. They will not know what teachers will be able to be retained on the staff of those schools. I heard somebody else talk about the situation of health. All of those things are crucial. They cannot and couldn't possibly be delivered effectively and efficiently by a direct rule minister. The Tory government simply don't have enough MPs to provide direct rule ministers in Northern Ireland. In the current situation.
And Claire Hanna from the SDLP, any sign of progress, Claire? Do you think there's progress? Do you think there's going to be a deal?
Well, I mean, you know, when you're in the meetings and the particular discussion papers that are getting into the detail, sometimes you feel there's progress. But as ever, the political part seems to be advanced or regressed in the media, and the mood music, as you journalists would call it, probably isn't particularly positive. But as your previous contributor said, we absolutely have to. It's not just a case that London isn't in a position to deliver direct rule and that it's not good for us in general, but every single week that passes without a budget makes it harder for those departments to spend the money properly, because it's not just a case of, right, here's our budget halfway through the year and spending it. If you want to spend it on the right things and not just have, you know, suddenly the last financial month in the financial year paint all the schools, if you want to spend it on actually the correct things, you need to have your budget in advance, and we're just taking that opportunity. So it's whether they, of course they can succeed. We have collectively solved much bigger issues than these. It's just a case of whether or not people are going in with the right frame of mind.
All right, listen, thank you very much indeed.